They say 12 million Americans are allergic to food, and 6 million of them are children who cannot yet fend for themselves. This leads us to ask, how should we protect children who have food allergies?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 737th edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Perth who are tuned in as we stream along the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. But whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Nikki James on the boards. Hello, Nikki.
Good morning.
Folks, an estimated 12 million Americans are allergic to food, and 6 million of them are children. Now, we're not talking about, like, lactose intolerance. We're talking about being allergic to food. When one is allergic to food and tastes the wrong food, one's reactions can range from mild cases of dermatitis and gastrointestinal and respiratory distress to life-threatening responses such as biphasic anaphylaxis and vasodilation. One's body, in other words, can simply shut down. According to the Food Allergy and Anaphylaxis Network, 90% of food allergies come from milk, egg, peanut, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, soy, and wheat, which is just about everything in the kitchen, right? For those who are allergic to foods, survival is a never-ending effort to dodge the wrong foods. And when the wrong foods are as ubiquitous as those just mentioned, avoidance can be a pretty darn tough job. But what about the children who cannot yet fend for themselves? How should we protect children who have food allergies? Here to help us shop for an answer, we have somebody who could probably give us a pretty darn good answer, Sandra Beasley, author of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. Sandra, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hi there. Happy to be joining you today.
Good to have you aboard. You're down in Mississippi.
I am. I've been doing a little bit of summering and just finished giving two readings for Don't Kill the Birthday Girl at a great bookstore called Square Books in Oxford and Lemuria in Jackson, Mississippi.
Good for you. Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. What on earth are you talking about?
Oh, well, you know, the phrase comes from the fact that when I was younger and would have birthday parties, although there was, of course, some Sandra-friendly treat that we could have, the reality was, like most kids, I wanted to see my guests enjoying the meal. So I would beg my mom to serve ice cream or cake or one of the things that everybody else really liked. The problem with that was once everybody had had that food, my sensitivities are so intense that if they, say, gave me a kiss on the cheek or took a drink out of my water glass, I could end up having a reaction. So that line of don't kill the birthday girl is a gentle reminder to everybody that, you know, once they've essentially contaminated themselves with food that I'm allergic to, they have to keep a distance.
Wow. And that, of course, would be something your mother would offer the community of the birthday party, right? Don't kill the birthday girl.
Yeah. I mean, in a way, it was meant to you know, kind of break the ice. It's too easy to do nothing but continually stress when you have these types of issues.
Well, let's start off with your allergies. What are they anyway?
Oh, goodness. Well, for starters, I'm allergic to 5 of the big 8 allergens that you were mentioning earlier. Mm-hmm. So my dairy allergy is quite severe, really deadly. I'm also allergic to eggs, some tree nuts, including cashews, pistachios, macadamia nuts, beef, shrimp, cucumbers, some melon, mustard. I mean, it really does kind of range throughout the food groups in terms of these sensitivities.
So there are a lot of things then that you're allergic to. So, and it's hard. Well, I guess we'll get into that. My goodness. What exactly is a food allergy?
Well,
is it like lactose being lactose intolerant?
No, that's an excellent question, because the simple fact of the matter is that while there are a lot of dietary conditions that are really affecting the population right now, a food allergy is a very particular response in which your body's mast cells, that's MAST, literally recognize individual food proteins as an enemy. And they try to respond to it by releasing histamines. And one of the things that people ask me sometimes is, well, I've got one friend who says that they have a food allergy and all that happens to them is their eyelids swell up and their lips get puffy. I've got another friend who has a food allergy who seems to throw up whenever. So what's the deal? Why are there such different reactions? And the answer is that in your particular body, the mast cells that respond to that food allergen are in probably a different part of the body. So somebody whose mast cells are in their eyes and their lips are going to experience those symptoms, whereas somebody who has them in their gastrointestinal tract or their breathing system will have a very different response.
Wow. And what we're talking about then is immune response.
Yes,
the body's immune response.
Very much so. And that's, these issues, there's a lot of crossover in terms of research and discussion within the immunology community, the gastrointestinal community, and the allergy community, and asthma, too, because asthma is a very common concurrent disease with food allergy.
And now, you spoke about there being a lot of food problems these days. I guess one that I just heard recently of is celiac disease. Is this an allergy or is this something else?
No, celiac is a body's inability to process the wheat or the gluten properly. Mm-hmm. So it's not quite like an allergic reaction in that it's less about what the body produces in response to the food and more about what the body's unable to do with the food. But it is quite severe. And and one of the things that I try to say is, although I do get frustrated with some of the cases of people who are intolerant who describe it in terms of food allergy, but then proceed to cheat in restaurants and socially. I do not apply that to people with celiac. I've known people who've suffered from it quite severely, and a lot of the same issues come up as with those who have wheat allergy.
Mm-hmm. So there it is. So why are you allergic? Do you ever?
We don't know. It's a simple answer. I mean, there's. It's understood that there's a likely ability to inherit a predisposition towards having allergies. But specific allergies are not inherited. And one of the frustrating things for a lot of parents right now is that there are very contradictory impulses of advice in the medical community. I mean, up
That's
until...
That's strange, isn't it?
Contradictory
pieces of advice coming from the medical community on anything?
Well, I think we all know the case of the doctor on TV saying something a lot different from your country down the street. But in particular, I mean, for example, the official advice of the pediatric associations for a long time was to absolutely not expose children to some of the common allergies, such as peanuts, until they were 3 years old, okay? But literally, they have reversed that position. The latest data says that minor exposures at an age-appropriate point are probably contributing to people not having allergies. So, I mean, you can imagine the frustration of parents who were obediently following advice and then being told, oh, no, actually, you may have done the very thing that made it more likely.
So then we really don't know why some people are allergic. We really don't know when it gets right down to it what to do about it.
Right.
So there is contradictory advice in all different directions. Let's turn to you then. You grew up with this. I mean, from the very beginning, you were allergic to all of these foods.
Right, and I'm 31, which means that I was born into a generation where food allergies were not as common as they are now. And so in addition to all of the logistical challenges and the scares, my parents just had to deal with flat-out ignorance, people who thought that allergies were an act of will, people who thought that I should toughen up, that I was lying about my allergies to get special treatment. I mean, in Don't Kill the Birthday Girl, I tell some stories about horrible treatment at the hands of waiters and chefs who thought, oh, a little touch of butter won't hurt her, but I also have some really inspiring stories of people who were responsive.
Would they actually do that? What she doesn't know won't hurt her, so I'll just slide this in. Would they actually do that stuff to you?
Yeah, and people would be so shocked because my sensitivity is such that, I mean, if somebody were to cut my food and they had used that same knife to cut cheese or to cut something with dairy in it, I would immediately start to react, and they would just get this shocked look on their face because they just would assume that nobody would know, and so...
And what would your reaction be? How does your body react to these things?
Well, usually what will happen is it'll start with a tingling on the lips, the tongue, the throat, I'll start making a little scratching noise because my throat itches, although sometimes I don't even realize it. My eyelids, unfortunately, will start to swell. That's one of the most frustrating things because that symptom will stick around for a few days usually. Unfortunately, it can get very severe very fast, everything from projectile vomiting, and I know it's a little early on a Saturday morning for the mention of that, but I can have severe difficulty breathing, and in some cases I have actually lost consciousness and been in serious trouble.
Wow. So, folks, we're talking about food allergies, and we're talking about food allergies with the person who probably knows more about it than most of us, Susan Beasley, author of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. And, of course, we're talking with you as well. If you would like to talk with Susan, you can join us today. We're at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Pick up your phone and join us. Any questions you might have about food allergies. When we come back from this break, I'd like to talk with Susan about what it was like to grow up with food allergies. And we'll talk a little bit about why there are more food allergies today than there were when she was growing up. Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of Metro Farm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. Metro Farm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. Metro Farm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. Metro Farm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of Metro Farm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, we just heard a commercial on the air for a farmer's market and all the wonderful new foods, fresh foods that are out. And I got to thinking what a terror it must be to be allergic to so many of those foods and to walk through a market like that and to dodge everything, all of the danger that is there. And, well, Susan Beasley, what the heck is it like?
I think that there's an issue sometimes where I'll go to farmers markets. I actually love farmers markets. I love to cook. But I think that sometimes people take for granted. They put all this effort into telling you each and every ingredient in the homemade salsa they've made or the dip or the hummus, but then they don't tell you what the ingredients are in the little pretzel or the chip or the thing that you're supposed to dip into it to actually get to taste
right.
those things.
Right.
So there's just odd little blind spots. Certainly, you know, in terms of fresh stuff, that's where odd allergies like cucumber really get me down because you don't get to just casually enjoy something like a fresh farm salad the same way.
So when you were growing up, let's take us back to your childhood because the notion of being a child and, you know, kind of defenseless against the world everything, all of these foods are like minefields that you have to walk through every day. How did you learn how to do that? Or tell us about how your mother took care of you, watched over you.
Sure. Well, my mother always said, and she said this in a loving way, but she would say raising you is a full-time job, you know, because you have all of the usual responsibilities in mothering, but you also have to be an on-site nurse, an on-site dietitian, an on-site, you know, detective sometimes, trying to backtrack and figure out what it was that I was reacting to. You know, it's not easy. And I think that I was in something of a military family. My father was frequently deployed because of service to the Army. And so she really was some months feeling like a single mother. And it's a scary thing. I think all parents are worried about being responsible for their child's welfare, but when the food you fix them and, you know, hand them and tell them is okay might be what brings them down, it's just a tremendous amount of pressure.
Yeah, and anxiety. Now, how did you discover which foods you were allergic to?
In my first month, standard thing, they tried to breastfeed with me, and I refused. What we realize now, and this is very common, is that I was probably responding to proteins of what my mother was eating, which were appearing in the breast milk. And so that's something that's often an early indicator for this generation as well, is if a child does not want to breastfeed. But when they try to work their way through the sequence of usual substitutes, cow's milk, goat's milk, soy milk, my body refused all those things as well. So I lost a huge amount of weight. Within my first month, I was right back in the doctor's office for malnutrition, essentially. And that was when that tipped them off that they needed to look for a spectrum of food allergies.
And how did they test? They put little pinpricks of things on your arm and see what swells up or something?
Yeah, you know, I mean, when a child is that young, usually they're going to err on the side of just testing for the absolute essentials, having a very simplified diet. I mean, in my case, I essentially was raised on pineapple juice and Calglucon supplement for my first few months. But you're right in that later, there are kind of three different ways that a diagnosis might be achieved. One is the prick test, which you alluded to, which would be when a space on an arm or the back is the skin's broken and just a tiny amount of the possible allergen is applied. And then they wait and see. They wait and see if a hive forms. They wait and see what the body does.
Mm-hmm.
You can also get blood tests, RAST tests, they're sometimes called. And a lot of families choose those because they're non-invasive and you don't traumatize the child. The downside of that is that you have a ton of false positives. I mean, my RAS test tried to claim that I was allergic to rice, which was a staple in my diet and still is. So you really have to be careful if you're going to not trust any one method of testing by itself. You need to combine it with, say, an oral food challenge where you take a small bite of the food and wait to see what happens.
You know, it's as if all of these foods were like a minefield and the mines were all disguised. So you don't know what they're on mine until you step on one that blows up in your face almost. And that probably happened a lot to you, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it would be very frustrating when there were kind of surprise ingredients in dishes. And sometimes foods become a trend food. This has happened with soy, where all of a sudden edamame, which I never really had to worry about running into unless I was eating in an Asian restaurant, edamame's popping up in everything. People are throwing it in salads. It's in a lot of frozen vegetable mixes.
It's soy lecithin. It's in almost all of the commercial breads that you find in the market, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So, or mango is another food. I have a severe mango allergy. And lately, it's a trend food. So you see mango cocktails, you see it in sushi, you see it in salsas, all these places that you usually would be safe for me, so to speak.
So what is the reaction of other people to your allergies? What about your children, the children that you grew up with?
And mm-hmm. I think that kids instinctively sense.
Kids can be pretty mean.
Yeah, they sense when somebody's different. Sometimes they were resentful because the accommodations, you know, they noticed a lot more the advantages that I got, like not having to clean the cafeteria tables at lunch, than the disadvantages. You know, they didn't, when they were teasing me about being lucky, they were forgetting all the times that one of them would bring in birthday cupcakes and I just wouldn't get one, you know, and so... But I think that a key, certainly for my generation, but then I also think for parents of children now, the key is kind of information. I mean, kids get fascinated by the science of this stuff. And, and I had pretty good experiences. I had a few people here and there who decided to test me on their own. They would give me things without telling me that they had food allergens in them. And, you know, those friends learned the hard way that my allergies are very real, and I think they were kind of terrified at what they'd done in hindsight.
What did they do?
Well, things like, you know, somebody giving me a kiss after they'd eaten chocolate and then joking like, well, I guess you're not so allergic then. And, of course, me running into the bathroom and flipping on the light to see, like, my face covered in hives. You know, those moments where it's, go over to friends' houses and they would serve you mashed potatoes with a little bit of a fake butter in it, thinking that they were going to be able to show you that there was something you could eat.
Wow. So you really had to learn how to kiss boys, didn't you?
I had to very, very carefully study the art of kissing boys. Yes, it took much, much research. Now, it is something that comes up. It's one of the tricky issues that parents are starting to realize that, you know, it's one thing to raise a child through the age of 15 with food allergies, but they're going to become teenagers and young adults with a very different set of challenges. And it's hard for people to talk about. It's hard to get that conversation going.
And yet you have to do it, too, don't you? From the very get-go, you have to realize that your child is going to leave sometime, and you have to start training them, or I guess right from the get-go.
Yeah, that's my stance. I apologize for that. That's something that I do think people have to be really proactive about, and I think that can mean talking to your kids about how they'll handle their allergies if they're all alone. I mean, I say to parents, okay, well, what about when your kid decides to backpack across Europe at the age of 22 and has no money and no health insurance over there? How's that trip going to go? And a lot of times they're horrified at the thought of it.
Did you do that?
I didn't backpack. No, I mean, my allergies, and that is partially because I had such severe and multiple allergies that I just was intimidated by the thought of traveling in a country, especially if I didn't speak the language.
Do you travel now?
I do travel now, but I tend not to travel outside the United States if I'm alone. But my family has traveled, and in Don't Kill the Birthday Girl, I tell some stories about, you know, we went to Italy for a cousin's wedding, and early on in the trip, I had a terrible allergic reaction that unfortunately caused me to use up my entire supply of Benadryl, which is one of the medications that a lot of people use to work with reactions. So this led to a somewhat harrowing and failed trip through Naples trying to find an American pharmacy that might have Benadryl.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to ask you how on earth you learned to survive with all of this. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, today we're talking about food allergies with Sandra Beasley, author of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. If you have questions that you would like to ask Sandra, pick up your phone and join us, 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. Right back. Welcome back. Michael Olson here. This is the Food Chain radio program. Today we're talking about food allergies with Sandra Beasley, author of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. Folks, when one is allergic to food and tastes the wrong food, one's reactions can range from mild cases of dermatitis and gastrointestinal and respiratory distress to life-threatening responses such as biphasic anaphylaxis and vasodilation. One's body, in other words, simply shuts down. According to the Food Allergy and Anaphylactic Network, 90% of the food allergies come from the Big Eight, which are milk, eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, fish, shellfish, soy, and wheat. And that's the grocery store. That's what's in the kitchen. So for those who are allergic to the food, surviving is a never-ending task of avoiding those foods. And when the wrong foods are ubiquitous as those we just mentioned, that's a tough, tough job. And that's what we're talking about today, is how you survive that. Sandra, have you ever had any severe reactions that have really put you down?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would say that the culprits that tend to get me the most are milk, shrimp, and cashews. I had a harrowing experience in Miami earlier this year where I did not realize that what I thought was a tahini sauce, a sesame-based sauce, was in fact a cashew butter. And I had actually left the restaurant and was behind the wheel of my car driving alone in South Beach on a trip when I realized that my reaction was quite severe. And I think the most terrifying moment was trying to call a friend to let them know what was going on and having them be unable to understand my voice through the cell phone because my nose was swelled shut, and so I didn't sound like myself. And literally having to pull over in Friday night traffic in Miami and having a severe allergic reaction on the spot, having some friends take me to the hospital while some other friends got my car home for the night. It's terrifying when it happens.
And that was because you had the wrong food at a restaurant.
All because of less of one bite of a raw foods wrap that had one dab of cashew butter on it.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I think anybody who is skeptical about the allergic reactions and the accommodations that we as a society are trying to do, when you see somebody react, you realize. I mean, it really is that bad.
Unequivocal. Well, we're going to go to the phones right now. Folks, if you care to ask any questions, you can join us at 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. And the subject, of course, is food and food allergies. Let's talk with Dan. Dan, welcome to the Food Chain.
Well, hi, Michael. Thanks for the program. This is a little off topic, but I have two questions about sprouting, please.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not supposed to eat gluten or what's in the milk?
Lactose?
Yeah, lactose. First question is sprouted wheat okay? Or sprouted wheat bread, for example?
So these are
this is off topic.
Really, I guess it's kind of off topic, but not really, because we're trying to come to grips with what exactly food allergies are. So as I understand it, these are not food allergies, they're something else, correct, Sandra?
It sounds to me like you're describing problems with intolerances, and you know, in terms of not being sure whether a sprouted bread is going to create the same gluten issues, unfortunately, my answer is I believe it would. I do think you would have problems with that. One of the ways in which we've really improved food labeling in the last 5 years is that it used to be that even when manufacturers would list the derivatives or ingredients of the various big allergens, they would be using phrases that a lay person, an everyday person at the supermarket, might not recognize.
For example?
So, casein. You might see casein on tuna, and you might not realize that casein is a milk derivative. It's used to stabilize the tuna in the can. And, you know, you might think, oh, well, why would there be dairy in this can of fish, and take it home, and next thing you know, someone is sick. And so what they have to do now is when one of those minor ingredients or derivatives is used, they have to put in all capital letters or something comparable the main ingredient in parentheses. So if it's a gluten-related product, they have to put wheat or gluten in all caps next to it.
Wow. So I didn't know, Dan. It sounds to me like you should avoid it. But it's not an allergy. It's an intolerance. And therein lies the difference.
I know that. My other question is, I belong to Weston A. Price Foundation, and they're big on fermenting and sprouting, and they make a big deal out of if you eat unfermented soy, it's going to mess with your hormones. And my friend's daughter is vegan. She can't stand tempeh, and she gets from the health food store soy that's made from sprouted soybeans, and I was wondering if that would be okay, if you know.
Hmm. Okay, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. I don't know, do you think you could answer that one, Sandra?
Yeah, to some extent. I think what Don't Kill the Birthday Girl actually does have an extensive section specifically devoted to soy, because it is an odd case of how a food has become very industrialized.
It's almost like a food that wasn't a food has now become a food. And not only is it a food, but it's a base food for almost the entire food chain now.
Well, and Dan, what Dan is referring to, and the reason why there's a lot of concern, is that, you know, sometimes people will say, well, soy has got to be fine. In the Chinese culture, they've been eating it for, you know, centuries, generations. Well, what a lot of people don't realize is, as he points out, the Chinese preparation of soy almost always, you know, ferments it, and it's always in quantities that are much smaller. I mean, that people here in the United States will go get a shake with soy protein and some type of fruit smoothie blend that has 9 times the soy that any typical Chinese would consume in a day. You know, we are consuming soy in massive and quantities.
And we're feeding our animals soy in massive quantities.
Right, so it's trickling down that way, too. It is a concern.
It's not really trickling down. It's more like this tsunami. of edamame.
I try to work a lot of kind of cultural history and science into Don't Kill the Birthday Girl, and one of the things that I talk about is the fact the reason why we have so much soy is Henry Ford. was obsessed with soy because he thought that if he could build a car that used soy panels instead of metal, it would be so lightweight and so gas efficient that he would make a million. So he sank all of his money into soy research. He at a World's Fair, he served a 14-course meal entirely of soy products. He got George Washington Carver to work on soy the same way he'd been working on peanuts. So a lot of people don't realize is that one of the greatest minds behind cars and automobiles is the one who got soy to be a subsidized product, and that's why it is so prevalent in today's food culture in the United States.
Well, that is a good one. I have not heard what that one before, but that's incredible. So when we come back, I want to ask why there the increase in the number of people with food allergies. Or was it that way before? We just didn't know about it. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson. Today we're talking food allergies with Sandra Beasley, author of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. What a thing to have to tell your guests at a birthday party. What a terrifying thing that must have been to grow up with. Pick up your phone and join us. 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. With your questions about food and food allergies, we will be right back with Sandra Beasley. Well, folks, where once there were few people with food allergies, now there are many and many more all the time. Or is that really the case? Let's ask Sandra Beasley, author of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl. Is it true that there are more and more people with food allergies all the time?
Well, we definitely have a huge rise in the amount of it in the population. You know, I think part of it is that there are differences in how food allergies are diagnosed than there would have been right. 20 years ago or 40 years ago. I mean, both my parents report having things that were probably food allergies in their childhood, but nobody ever tested it. You know, you just avoided that food and that was that. But, you know, however, we do have these really big inconsistencies. In 2007, the CDC did a study that calculated the number of kids in America as having food allergy at about 4%. And then this year, in Pediatrics Journal, another study was published that estimated the amount of children at having food allergies as 8%.
Wow.
Now,
that's
no,
huge.
Well, it is. And I don't think anybody's arguing that that number actually doubled. But I think it shows you that the number is going up and that, furthermore, there, we are sometimes missing portions of the population. I mean, there's a huge amount of food allergy in the African-American population and in rural areas. And maybe in some of our studies, we're not reaching those people mm-hmm. in terms of the surveys. They might not be getting the medical care that a lot of people are who are under health insurance.
So why more now?
We don't. One of the theories that you'll hear people toss around is what's called the hygiene hypothesis. And that's the idea that the body in today's clean world is looking for an enemy, is looking for a bacteria, is looking for all of the things that used to be able to focus its immune system's resources on, and then not finding that is instead turning inwards and attacking what should be respected as food. There's some testing going on to see if actually releasing harmless third-party bacteria will create the opportunity for the body to focus on that.
Well, why don't we just have the kids go play in the mud?
Well, see, that's the problem, is that the problem with the hygiene hypothesis and with these helminths, it's called the helminth therapy, it's putting pigworm in the blood, is that, you know, people are playing in the mud. I mean, there's high incidences of food allergy in India and other places around the world where we don't have this cult of cleanliness in the culture.
Okay.
So you know,
it may or may not be the case then.
It may or may not be the case. And certainly what we were talking about earlier with the level of food processing, people have suspicions about that as well.
That's kind of where my suspicions go. I think right toward that. But I also think that we do live in a clean world and that does cause problems. And, you know, where I see that is if those of us who live in a very, very clean environment travel to, you know, distant countries and distant lands and developing nations and the water's not clean and, you know, if you go to Cairo and drink the water, you're going to be in trouble.
Mm.
So let's go to the phones and 800-624-2665, 831-479-1080. If you have any questions for Sandra Beasley, now is the time to ask him. Let's go to Ron. Ron, welcome to the Food Chain Radio Program. Are you there?
Hello?
You're on.
Yeah, I've never been on the radio before. So.
Welcome.
So this is new to me. I was listening to your show, and I suffer with food allergies as well. And how that happened was is I got in a really bad car accident many years ago, and I decided to just see a chiropractor instead of a regular doctor. And he said after 3 months, you know, I should be fine. I shouldn't have any pain, but I still had pain. And so he suspected that it could have something to do with me eating, you know, certain types of food that's causing the pain. So he suggested a food blood allergy test. And I was really surprised at some of the foods that I was allergic to, and it was like a certain percentage on this chart of what foods I should avoid. Anyways, so I was really surprised, like garlic, you know, and I really love garlic was one of them that I was supposed to avoid.
Oh, that would be a tragedy.
Yeah, well, he said that the highest was like baker's yeast and brewer's yeast and milk and it got down lower than on the percentage of the chart to where it was like green peas and the bottom was like red.
So did the pain go away when you changed your diet?
Yes, it did. The other thing he said too is that our blood type dictates what type of diet, what type of foods we should eat, which was really interesting.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that before.
Where you have?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, where you, you
so
know.
So if you have a certain type of blood, you should eat meat, and if you have a different kind of blood, you should eat fish or something like that.
Well, I'm supposed to eat more like lettuce and vegetables and fruits and stuff like that, and less meat. And is what it says. But I think I heard her say something in the show about false positives about taking.
Yeah, I think right. No, I mean what you're. Everything that you're saying makes sense and has jived with, you know, some of my own experiences. When you're talking about levels, what happens is when those blood tests come back, they not only identify which foods your body is reacting to with IgE or histamines, but how much proportionately. So people will talk about a level 5 allergy versus a level 1 allergy. You know, I think that the thing is, though, elimination diets are really useful, and I'm so glad to hear that cutting all those things out alleviated the symptoms. However, it is entirely possible that if you were to slowly reintroduce some of the elements of everything you dropped back into your diet, you may find that not all of the things that you've cut out were actually necessary to feel better. It may be that there's just one or two key allergens, and the rest, as I've said, may be false positives.
But what's really interesting is, and this really blew my mind, is, and they're having it this weekend, I went to the and knowing that I had this, you know, this allergy to garlic, I went to the garlic festival last year, and I ate a whole bunch of garlic. I mean, I just, like I said, I love it, and I think everything from mosquitoes to vampires were staying away from me, you know. And but I felt really kind of, it was interesting the way I felt. I could feel this kind of a warm feeling, and I actually kind of felt pretty good in a way, which was, you know, really strange, but...
Well, the danger, the tough thing, either when you're reintroducing foods or for parents of young children, if the first time your body has had a food in a while, it very much may not react because your body has stopped thinking about that protein. It's no longer investing energy in producing cells that are designed to recognize and attack that protein. So, Lord knows I would be very sad if either garlic or bacon had to be removed from my diet.
We're going to take a quick break back. Pick you both up. Welcome back, folks. I have to ask Sandra my question before we run out of time, which we're going to likely do here, given the number of calls that are trying to get through. Sandra, how do we protect children who have food allergies?
We devote energy into research, into long-term solutions. We need hard data on what the incidence numbers are, where these reactions are happening. Are kids really having reactions to airborne things, or is that a misunderstood phenomenon? We really have got to focus more on the long-term solutions and not fixate on any one food allergy as the enemy. I get so tired of people vilifying peanuts. They are not the enemy. Food allergies are the enemy. Peanuts are just one of the weapons that phenomenon uses.
Okay.
And we have sympathy, you know. We spread the word.
spread the word, and when somebody says they have food allergy, don't try to feed them peanuts or chocolate.
Take them seriously.
Take them seriously. Okay, good. Let's go to Ron. You want to finish up, Ron?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The one other thing I wanted to say is the reactions, the type of reactions that I've had after I've eaten something, like within a half hour, I'm hacking, or I've got a lot of phlegm, or I just, I can feel like one time the doctor told me, well, you have high blood pressure. And I could actually feel a discomfort in my body. I'm so sensitive. So
it just hits you, doesn't it?
You got an echo going?
Yeah.
Oh.
Hey, thanks for the call, and we're honored that we're your first. Appreciate it, Ron. And let's go quickly to Judy. Judy, welcome to the food chain.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Would food allergies have a bearing in part or in some way to my brother-in-law, dementia or Parkinson's?
Good question. Sandra?
Thanks. Yeah, there was a period of time when food allergies were being discussed as a marker for other physical conditions. I wish I could tell you that we have more research that points to that. I can't tell you that there's any hard scientific demonstrable link, but I will say that a lot of people underestimate the ways in which food allergies and reactions can show themselves as mental confusion, as a kind of disconnect. And certainly, if that happens concurrent with those illnesses, it can be mistaken as in terms of where the symptoms are coming from.
Mel, you're really quickly, what do you got?
I was wondering if allergies can manifest themselves digestively, particularly vomiting.
Thank you. Sarah?
Yeah, there are different, like I said, certainly vomiting, the mass systems can...
Projectile vomiting, I heard it.
Yep, it is a glorious thing.
So, folks, if you want a good read and a good way of understanding food allergies, pick up a copy of Don't Kill the Birthday Girl by Sandra Beasley. Sandra, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed the presentation. And look forward to finding a cure to food allergies. Thank you, folks, for tuning in. See you next week for more What's Eating What Radio on the Food Chain.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.